Just listen to this, Terry Barrington roared. We acknowledge receipt of your application for a permit to burn charcoal in a designated conservation area, blah, blah, blah. However, we cannot process your application since it was not accompanied by four duplicate copies duly countersigned and witnessed by a registered notary. We have therefore cancelled your application. Should you wish to proceed further, you should file Form 38837/C, Notice of Intention to Reapply, where a previous application has failed, together with all requisite copies and supplementary documentation. Also, duly notarized. For crying out loud, what does it all mean? He threw the roll of parchment onto the table and folded his arms. Well, he said, I've about had it with these clowns. If you really want a barbecue, you damn well sort it out. Molly Barrington looked up from the flowers she was arranging. All right, dear, she said. Leave it to me. I'll deal with it when I've got 5 minutes. Terry laughed. You reckon? They're impossible. How anything ever gets done around here, I can't begin to imagine, and to think we came here to get away from all that kind of thing. I'll just pop down to the council offices and have a quiet word with them, Molly said. I'm sure it can all be straightened out, calmly and reasonably. Terry scowled at her. You're saying I'm not calm and reasonable? I didn't say that, dear. I am beautifully calm, Terry shouted. I am perfectly fucking reasonable. Yes, dear. Now, would you make me a cup of tea? My hands are a bit full. Another thing. It took forever to boil a kettle in this dump. Theoretically, the whole tower was one great big solar panel, and they ought to have enough power to keep the lights on right across Europe and barely notice. But, as with everything else in this ghastly place, the gap between theory and practice... Almost out of tea, he noticed. She'd ordered a fresh supply from home. Stuff was supposed to get here within 48 hours, but that was a laugh. And he really didn't want to be cooped up with Molly in a confined space if they ran out of tea. Or, saints and ministers of grace preservers, gin. He made himself a coffee and stumped up the many, many flights of stairs to his study. At times like this, he told himself, waiting for the bloody laptop to wake up, it's only updating the blog that keeps me going. The thought of all of them back in the foggy, rain-sodden UK, gawping at the gorgeous sunny pictures of the spectacular view from the ramparts, and all that guff, wishing they were here, dying slowly and painfully of envy. Day 17. Another spectacular sunrise over the distant mountains. Sometimes I wonder what I've done to deserve the uniquely special privilege of being here, in this amazing place. No, that could do with rephrasing. Start again. Day 17. Woke up to another amazingly spectacular sunrise seen from the top of our ancient historic watchtower, overlooking unspoilt virgin forest and a stunning panoramic view of the nearby snow-capped mountains. Downstairs, Molly is busy arranging some choice blooms from our garden, which promises to be especially spectacular over the coming months. No, sod. Already said spectacular once. He changed the first one to breathtaking, which was just as good. He scrolled through the photos he'd taken that morning, but they were all a bit blurry and indistinct. Bloody perpetual mist. And wouldn't do at all. Okay then, Plan B. He called up another gallery of pictures, diligently culled from the net, and chose three. One of New Zealand, the other two a remote corner of Albania, and posted those instead. This afternoon we planned to stroll down to the nearby village, where the produce stalls in the marketplace are piled high with mouth-watering local fruit and veg. That made him laugh out loud. Packet soup and tinned peaches, more like. In theory, the local yokels were supposed to come round door to door with a wheelbarrow. If so, they were mighty discreet about it, and quite unnaturally timid about knocking on the door. But you had to have masses of stuff about food and drink in these blogs, giving the impression that every day was one long five-star cordon bleu blowout, and all for less than a kebab and a Coke back home. Now somewhere he had some old photos of him and Molly sitting outside a café in Saint-Paul-de-Vence, blurry enough that they could be practically anywhere. A bit of photoshopping to get rid of any actual lettering on the signs, they'd do perfectly for the blog. He smiled. Maybe it wasn't such a bad life after all. The nerve of it, though. Bloody town hall bureaucrats telling him he needed a license for a barbecue in his own backyard. He might just possibly understand if it was a question of aggravating the neighbours, but there weren't any, not as far as the eye could see, which from the top of the tower was a very long way indeed. So who the hell gave a damn, apart from a bunch of pointy-eared, pointy-nosed paper shufflers with nothing better to do than tear up perfectly good application forms? I wouldn't stand for it if I were you. Absolutely. If there's one thing that really ticks me off, it's being pushed around by... Who said that? He looked round, but there was nobody in the room. He considered those of his electronic devices that were capable of simulated speech, then inspected them, one by one, eliminating them from his inquiries. That just left voices inside his head. Unless you're Joan of Arc or an American evangelist, not a good sign. He made a promise to himself to throttle back a little on the drinkies and not get so worked up about things. The mist was starting to clear, and the view, through the to all intents and purposes non-existent wall, was, he had to admit, pretty damn spectacular. The Snentwood, the sinuous curve of the mouthwash, sparkling in the sunlight, the rags of mist softening the peaks of the distant Torp Mountains. You could learn to put up with a lot for the sake of a view like that. He wondered how you went about learning to paint. And soon he'd slipped into a reverie in which he was celebrating the success of his first one-man show in Bond Street, interspliced with shots of himself with palette and easel, pan out over the landscape, then close in on the same image miraculously transfigured on the canvas. Definitely, he told himself, as his eyelids began to droop. Definitely look into that. Painting. Can't be difficult after all, because look at some of the deadheads who make a living at it. He slept. And as his eyes closed, inside his head, another eye opened and looked around. It peered through the walls of Terry's skull as easily as he looked through the ad-lib transparent walls of the tower. It was bemused by much of what it saw. Not worried, because it didn't do stress, or fear, or doubt, but curious, and not entirely sure it approved, though it was nothing if not, no pun intended, open-minded. This human, for example, judged by appearances, or even by the layer of accumulated garbage littering the surfaces of its mind. It was worthless, no use to itself or anyone else, a fat, old, redundant consumer of resources better applied elsewhere. Kill it, on grounds of tidiness and good taste, if for no other reason, and move on. But the great red eye knew better than that. It had been open and looking about for a very long time. It was wise, patient, and long-suffering. 3 ages of the world spent enduring chronic conjunctivitis teaches many things, particularly if throughout most of that time one has no knuckles with which to rub. It knew better than to judge anything by superficialities or to discard anything that might be made useful. It knew that even the most unlikely, vain, effete, contemptible little creature might have hidden depths or special talents, all of them grist to the mill, all of them potentially nutritious, like the tiny edible core of an artichoke. It would be simply untrue to say that there could be more to Terry Barrington than met the eye. But what there was of him was there for it to see, and merited a close inspection. Filtering out the rubbish, therefore, the eye looked for qualities and found persistence, a sort of dogged determination that others, Mrs. Barrington very much included, might be misled into filing under obstinacy. Intelligence, too, limited, not the right word, constrained and confined, like a light shone down a tube, and capable of being concentrated to great effect, like the same light through a lens. Imagination, always worth having, though neither necessarily nor exclusively useful to its owner. A latent but strong sense of self-worth, robust enough to override the evidence, flexible enough to find the gaps and the crevices in the facts. An offshoot of that, an invincible sense of entitlement. Pure gold in context. Given the choice, the eye would have preferred someone else. An elven king, a dwarf lord, a wizard, or one of the kings of men. Well, it had had plenty of those over the years. And look at it now. A disembodied faculty, marginally extant, bed and breakfasting in the minds of lower animals. Perhaps it was time for a different approach. After millions of years trying to bash down the front door, it's only sensible to consider digging up from the sewers. The eye fell on the curious object lying on the table in front of the sleeping human. It was unfamiliar. At first, the eye had assumed it was a book, or a slate for writing on, because there were letters and a picture of some place. Something about the picture caught the eye. It took it a moment to realize that it didn't recognize the place depicted. But that was impossible. The eye had seen every corner of the realms, from the moment when they were first formed out of the fiery catarrh of Ilúnvendor, through all 3 ages, every tectonic fashion, every whim of geology and afforestation. The eye had seen and knew it all. Every square inch. But this image it did not recognize. In which case, either it was fiction, a work of the imagination, or it was a view of somewhere else. The eye studied the image closely, distinguishing every pixel, every photon of every pixel, and pronounced it unfamiliar. No pencil or brush had made the picture. It had been produced by taking light and capturing it somehow like a fly in amber. Incredibly powerful magic, the eye noted in passing, though it would have to come back to the implications of that later. No, the picture was true, not a figment of imagination. It was an accurate representation of a real place, somewhere. Somewhere else. The eye blinked. There had been long passages of time when the eye had been closed, not daring to show itself. During those dark ages, since it could not sleep, it had turned inwards, given all its infinite energy and power over to contemplation of the intangible, the infinite, the very fundamentals of existence and reality. Much it had calculated and proved. Much more was extrapolation and mere speculation. More likely than not, but still not susceptible of proof. And among this material was what the eye had decided to call multiverse theory. The hypothesis that this is only one of an infinite number of alternate realities, parallel universes might be a better way of putting it, all occupying one indivisible point on the XYZ and T axes. But stretching away as far as even the eye could see in another equally valid direction, whose existence it could apprehend but never reach. The rational part of its persona held that, since none of this could be proved, it could not be considered to be true or real in any meaningful sense. The more speculative part held that there were more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in any discipline of philosophy, and it would be foolish to leave any possibility out of account when planning long-term strategies. The two halves had argued long and hard over this during the long night, and had come to the conclusion that, since they were never going to see eye to eye on the point, it was best not to dwell on it. But the picture was evidence, genuine hard data. Once, in a place and at a time unknown, light had licked and slithered round these mountains and these forests, before splatting against a screen, or getting caught up in a cobweb and ending up here in the despicable little human's remarkable book. Light can do many things, but it can't lie. No dog ever ate light's homework. So, if the picture was real, the mountains and the trees were real, and if so, where were they? Not round here, that was for sure. Nowhere in the realms. In which case, it followed, ineluctably, that outside or above or below or beyond the realms lay somewhere else. And the only possible way of accounting for that was, yes, you guessed it, multiverse theory. The eye couldn't grin, but it could shine. Told you so, it told itself. I told you, but you wouldn't listen. Well, that's one in the eye for you. Yes, all right, the logical aspect of its persona agreed crumpily. But so what? Don't you see? Demanded the speculative part. And the logical part asked if that was supposed to be funny. Multiverse theory. There are other worlds, like this one, but different. Other realms, filled with other mountains. Other oceans, other cities, other millions and millions of people, none of whom have ever encountered the eye or what it stands for, or been given the opportunity to listen to its message and doctrine. Millions and millions and millions of people who, to put it bluntly, didn't know any better.
Fresh meat and pastures new. Yum.
It took the eye a long time, several milliseconds, to recover from the shock. Then it set about absorbing as much data as it possibly could. It downloaded the human's brain. Large parts of it were apparently encrypted, but that shouldn't be a problem. It swarmed through the human's book, which it was able to do even though it lacked fingers to turn pages, hitherto an insuperable problem in the quest for knowledge. "I like this book," the eye decided. "I wonder if there are more where this one came from." And found a tantalizing portal that appeared to lead somewhere completely unimaginable, except that it was for the time being closed, or offline, to use the human's word for it. "Sorry for any inconvenience. Please try again later." The eye resolved to do just that and moved on. In a neglected cupboard at the back of human's mind, it came across the sentiment, "If thine eye offend thee, pluck it out." It did the metaphysical equivalent of cordoning off that area with yellow tape, but decided it wasn't a serious threat at the moment. Exhaustion. It had done too much. It was horribly frustrating to be so weak, even here, in the greatest of its strongholds. But the tower could only draw in and retain so much power. And the wretched humans and their strange devices tapped off an infuriatingly high percentage of that. So the eye had had to come to terms with certain limitations, which it wisely accepted. It closed itself and withdrew from the human's mind, and he woke up. "Bloody bureaucrats," he thought. He yawned and stretched, found he'd woken up with a headache. Aspirin. Had they got any? Probably not. Molly had ordered some, but that was the trouble with having to get every damn thing mail order via the net. You ran out of something, and then God only knew when the replacement supply was going to get there. "This is a horrible place," he thought. "We ought to go home." Now, where did that come from all of a sudden? Never once, in spite of all the buggerations and tribulations, had he considered admitting defeat, giving it best, crawling back to Putney with his tail between his legs. Nor, he resolved, was he going to consider it now. Not after he'd posted all that stuff on the blog about being so happy and having spent so much money. The latter point especially. God only knew what they could expect to get for this place if they sold it again, even with all the improvements, which he knew only too well had barely scratched the surface. Not enough to buy anything decent back home, that was for sure. They'd end up in a grotty little rat hole somewhere, with no money. No. He'd made this apple pie bed for himself, and now he had to lie on it. No alternative. Sorry, but there it is. He looked at the screen of his laptop and swore under his breath. Somehow, in spite of the fortune he'd spent on antivirus software, it had contrived to pick up something nasty. He flipped through to see what the damage was, but it appeared to be limited to the screensaver. Gone was the view from the top of the tower on a clear day. Amend that slightly. The clear day. There'd only been one so far. And in its place, a horrible, glaring, cartoon red eye. He couldn't decide whether it was a still or an animation. He couldn't see it moving, but he was sure it did. When he looked away for a split second, someone's sense of humour. He did everything he could to get rid of it, but nothing seemed to work. Still, it looked horrible, but it didn't seem to be doing any harm. He added, "Get rid of horrible thing," to his list of things to do, and dismissed it from his mind.